David Brock is a widely published author and Democratic activist. In 2004, he founded Media Matters, the nation's premier media watchdog. Following the 2010 elections, he founded the Democratic super PAC American Bridge, one of the largest modern campaign war rooms ever assembled, which uses research, tracking, and rapid response to defeat Republicans. He is the author of 5 books, including his 2002 best-selling memoir, Blinded by the Right, The Conscience of an Ex-Conservative. His new book is Killing the Messenger, the right-wing plot to derail Hillary and hijack your government. We welcome David Brock back to the roundtable. David, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me on.
Give us an idea of what you, this is a very personal account, but give us an idea of what you wanted to accomplish in telling the story of not only what has been going on, but what is going on right now.
So I started this book a year ago, and I was trying to, in part, predict the Republican playbook for 2016. And so I try to lay out what the apparent strategies are for Republicans against Hillary Clinton as the Democratic nominee next year. And for better or worse, I think I did a pretty good job predicting where we would be. So part of what I do is take the reader through the various character attacks that really, starting back soon after she left office as Secretary of State, began. A number of conservative groups and super PACs were started to try to tarnish her record and discredit her reputation even before she decided to run. And that, of course, continues today. So I walk through Benghazi, allegations against the Clinton Foundation, the email controversy, and then various other aspects of her record that are being distorted to try to show her to be out of touch, or a bad candidate, or too left-wing, or too right-wing. I show how a lot of these phony scandals are manufactured, and I name the names of who's behind them. And I equate it to some extent to what happened to the Clintons in the 1990s. So it's kind of like, here we go again.
That idea of here you go again, or here we go again, is throughout the book. And the one thing that I thought of as I was reading it is, yeah, and by God, we should never be asking people to give up. But if you're Hillary Clinton, what do you need this for?
That's a great question. So I think that she is one. I think she's uniquely positioned. I think the Republicans and the Democrats both know that, one, she's the most formidable candidate the Democrats could field. And I think both by virtue of who she is, what she stands for, and I think that the unique qualities that she has, both as a person and her values, to both cement President Obama's progressive legacy, protect things like the Supreme Court, and bring some more change of the type that the country is looking for. You know, I have a history in the conservative movement, as I write about in the book, and 20 years ago, I wrote a book that was a biography of Hillary Clinton, and that was at a time when I was probably one of the most skeptical observers in the country. And however, I did a lot of homework for that book. I tried to follow the facts as I could find them. And I came out with a very different conclusion. It was contracted to be kind of a hit job type of book of the type that many others have written. But I found a different person. I found someone who is an amazing trailblazer, who even then had the same kind of clear political vision that we see today, who even then had probably a couple of decades of passionate advocacy for strong families and for children behind her. And I also think a set of strong moral values. And I wrote in that book that I thought that she had the potential anyway to be more historically important figure than her husband. That was 20 years ago. I wasn't obviously planning anyone's presidential campaign, but those are the qualities that I found. And I think those are the qualities that people are seeing. And if they haven't seen them yet, we'll begin to see as the campaign really gets underway.
Is there truth to what is perceived by many, including Democrats, many Democrats, who find her to be evasive.
Right. I don't believe so. But let me say that, you know, one of the audiences for this book is Democrats, Democrats who are either supporting Hillary or are thinking of supporting Hillary. And one of the reasons I wrote it was because I feel that even among her own supporters, they don't. This is, some of these issues are complicated. They're confusing. You can't really rely on the media to sort out the fact and the fiction. And so I think it's really important that people know how to talk about these issues, such as the email controversy, in a way that's understandable. And it's certainly also understandable that, that people don't know how to do that because, you know, people read the headlines. They don't necessarily take the time to sift through all the evidence, as I try to do in this book, and reach conclusions based on the facts. They get involved in all the chatter. And, yeah, the chatter is that Hillary Clinton doesn't answer questions. But what we've seen, I think, since the email story first broke has been an attempt to answer all the questions. I think between what Hillary has said, what the campaign has put out, my own group is called Correct the Record, which also does fact-finding around these issues. There are answers to these questions. They're just have a little bit of trouble breaking through when the media has a storyline or a narrative that she's holding back or she's not telling the full story, when in fact I think the story is out there. It's just like you have to make a little effort to find it. And so I try to summarize it all to the best I can in this book so that people could have it all in one place.
There is the playbook, as you say, the Hillary playbook that is, for want of a better term, they're out to get her. And that's probably an apt term, right?
Yes,
so,
I think that's right.
So, but then there's also how you react to it. And I guess that's what I wonder about in the book. Because, we see these times, even in the last couple of weeks, where she said, well, I'm not going to apologize. And the next day she said, oh, okay, well, I will apologize. And there seem to be those clumsy moments. And you wonder, the two things that come through my mind is, okay, well, if you're going to do that, having been through this so many times, you think it would be more of a well-oiled machine, and two, be stronger against these attacks, which, as you say, are very complicated, but quite frankly have been complicated going back to Whitewater.
Right. I think that's a fair point. I mean, what I would say is that, you know, I try to set myself up in this book as someone who, you know, from knowledge back in the day of the conservative movement and an understanding of their strategies and tactics then, which I think a lot of which are being replicated now, I try to predict. But, you know, the truth is that in April, when the fact of her use of the personal email account first came out, I couldn't have predicted that 6 months later we'd still be talking about it. I can't, you know, speak for the campaign. I can't speak for Hillary, but it's surprising to me. And so my view of this is that she can't do enough in the eyes of many. In the eyes of many of her critics, she can't do enough.
Right.
And so I think the media wanted some kind of a concession. They wanted a pound of flesh. And it feels to me as if there was a turning point in the interview that she did with ABC News where she took responsibility and for her part in this and said she was sorry, that the page is starting to turn. The question is, okay, could she have done that sooner? And I think the answer is we don't know if that would have actually satisfied her critics. I doubt it. I think the bar would have been set higher and they would have said, well, say sorry and say it while you're on your knees. So I think this is a game that the Republicans play and the press plays. But the reality is that, she has addressed it. The campaign's addressed it. The more the emails come out and people see what's in them, they see that they're really entirely benign. They're about whether she wants skim milk in her tea. And, you know, an underreported fact, 2 weeks ago, the Justice Department made a legal filing about the email, and they said it was beyond any question that what she did with the personal account, what she did by separating the work email and the deletion of the personal email, was all legal and proper and appropriate. But people don't know that because that's a story that gets very short shrift.
And just as recent as this past weekend, she was still defending it and saying why there were certain emails that were dated prior to when we originally thought they were dated back to, and she couldn't explain that. So there are those moments where, here again, you wonder why the campaign doesn't see that coming, I guess?
Well, you know, I mean, yes, I think that there are probably an endless array of questions related to all this. What was made clear on Sunday by the campaign, I think, is that the confusion about January and March, I don't think makes a whole lot of difference, but the reality is that the server, the personal server, wasn't established until March.
Yeah.
That's when the record of her email started. And so there were some prior emails, but they weren't, the way I understand it, they weren't on the personal server. That didn't start until March.
Okay. So let me ask you the big question here, because I'm just on the sidelines. I'm just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
So I'm watching Hillary Clinton, watching her on the Sunday shows, and I'm listening to her to, I believe, two events on Road to the White House on C-SPAN, my favorite show. And then I listen to Donald Trump on 60 Minutes. So this is what I don't get. Why do we need such specifics when it comes to Hillary Clinton and the email, or Benghazi, or where were you on the night of October 11th? And yet, and not to knock Scott Pelley, because I think he did an amazing job of trying to get out specifics from Donald Trump, we seem to let that go. And by we, I mean really the media and the general public.
Yeah, well, I definitely think there's some truth in that, and I agree that there was a good try in that interview. But look, all that's been covered about Donald Trump has really been the atmospherics around Donald Trump. No real serious, he hasn't put out that many serious plans, but no real serious effort to look at his record, at his business record. And this applies to some of the other candidates, too. So there is, I argue in the book there are Clinton rules, and the Clinton rules are that what's considered normal and usual for every other politician somehow is made to look wrong when the Clintons do it. And there is a kind of double standard at work, and it's particularly at work with Hillary. Some will argue that's in part because she's one who's poised to break the glass ceiling. But we could spend the whole interview here talking about email problems of other Republican candidates, Jeb Bush 7 years later turning over a small portion of his email. I don't think voters are really interested in that, so I'm not going to go down that road too far. But the reality is there is a double standard here, and there's serious examination to be done of other candidates. Even before she declared her candidacy, you had every media institution in the country with a full-time reporter on the so-called Clinton beat, and they were looking for, every half a crumb they could find, and inflated into something that it really wasn't. And so I don't, by the way, think this is ideological or partisan by the press. I think this is just, other than Donald Trump, the Clintons are probably the best out there for ratings and for newspapers and for click-throughs. And so they get a disproportionate amount of coverage. But I think you're right that the Trump coverage could be more substantive. And so could the Hillary Clinton coverage. I mean, she is out there day in and day out rolling out a lot of substantive programs that I think try to address some of the problems that we face in the country. And, you may get one small story about her college affordability plan or
right.
her plan to reform campaign finance reform or the path to citizenship for our immigrants. But it has trouble breaking through the din of email, email, email.
I was going to ask you about that because, as you were saying about Donald Trump, there have not been major policy statements. There have not been papers coming out on plans and programs that he is looking to implement as president of the United States. To contrast that, Hillary Clinton has done quite a bit. And looking just at her website this morning, there is gobs of information of various things that she is interested in doing. I go back to this, and I apologize for nailing this into the ground if that's what I'm doing. But again, how much of it is on the candidate and on the campaign and even on the Democratic Party to bring that to the surface and to use the money that they have as a campaign and have as a party and be able to push through some of this and say, okay, and put a positive spin on it.
Right. Well, look, there is some responsibility, and, you know, I'm not critical of the campaign, but, you know, if I look back at history of the Democratic Party, you know, I've been involved for a dozen years now trying to create more effective communications vehicles for progressives, and it's hard work. We don't have a dedicated cable channel. We don't have the presence in talk radio that the conservatives do. So they still have, even though I think a lot has changed for the better in the years that I've been observing this and participating in it, it's still, you know, the progressive view is out there, but it's still harder to find, and it's difficult. I mean, we looked in Media Matters, our progressive media watchdog group, at 1 month of coverage recently, just in the New York Times, of all Clinton stories, and 70% of them were email-related, and 30% was everything else. And, you know, there was an interesting column recently by Nate Silver where he talked about basically a feedback loop that happens. So basically you start with a barrage of stories on emails, some of which were quite flawed, which I go into in the book. But then that has, or at least is seen to have some effect on polling. So then you have compounded with stories of some sinking in the polls. And then that leads to press speculation about what Vice President Biden may or may not do. And when you have all that together, it's a tough task. I'm not disagreeing that you know, you gotta use a lot of elbow grease and it's swimming upstream and you gotta, you know, try harder. But it's not easy.
Absolutely. The other thing I wanted to get to is the fact that if Hillary Clinton becomes the candidate, which seems, if you're a betting person, okay, will probably be the nominee. Now, if you accept that premise, then we can only assume that this is just the beginning of the playbook that you have outlined in this book. In other words, you save your heavy artillery for the real battles, and that would be from August, September, October of 2016.
Right. So, are we going to see more of the same? I do think that we're going to see the same and possibly more and worse, as you're suggesting. I think that some may disagree with this, but my analysis is that the Republicans don't have much to offer and don't have much to run on issue-wise, and so they settled on these kind of character attacks going back a couple of years, and they've rolled it out in phases. Phase one was, we're going to recycle some of these things from Arkansas days, and maybe she won't run. We're going to tire her out, tire people out on her. That didn't work. By the time we get to next summer, yeah, I think the strategy will be, one, disenfranchise the Democratic vote, but also, and that's happening even now, dampen enthusiasm for Hillary's candidacy with this relentless scandalmongering. And the question is, I think, and it's, you know, I don't have a crystal ball, but the question is that effective? Will that work? And the answer I come up with is to, again, go back to the 1990s when you had a similar situation in that politically, there wasn't a lot of room for the and substantively for the Republicans to maneuver, and so they personalized everything against President Clinton, and they went to an extreme. The public rejected that extreme in the impeachment. he left office with higher approval ratings than ever, and Hillary ended up in the Senate. So I'm optimistic, even though I agree with you that we're probably just, you know, the beginning or midway through a lot of sludge.
The name of the book is Killing the Messenger, the right-wing plot to derail Hillary and hijack your government. The book is published by 12. David Brock, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Again, the title of the book is Killing the Messenger, published by 12 by David Brock. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.